Bright rode on throughout the next day, following the stream and keeping to the hug of a range of foothills, where the canopy of hickory was thickest and there was less chance of being seen. He took short breaks to water the horse and to feed the child from the thin skim of goat's milk in the bucket tied to the saddle pommel. As the sun began to slip behind him, he tethered the horse near an S in the stream. A few deep brown trout grazed fatly in the dark holds beneath the stretch of half-submerged hemlock trunk that had fallen across the water. He unswaddled his son, walked out on the trunk with the boy, and knelt down as he had done the previous night to dunk the boy's naked hindquarters in the water. The child meeped and mewed up at him as he laid it on the ground. He walked out onto the trunk once again to wash the diaper, but this time, as he stooped to the stream, he lost his balance and toppled headfirst into the water. He stood up spluttering, thoroughly soaked, and reaching into his pocket, found the matches ruined. He stood there, waist-deep and dripping, looking down into his palm at them. Then he let them fall from his hand to float away like tiny boats in the current. He sloshed through the churned silt to the steep lip of the bank and pulled himself up next to his boy. The child's feathery red hair fell thinly across its knobbled head in the style of a middle-aged auctioneer or feed store man. The same coppery color gave the boy a pair of sharp little eyebrows that scrunched and relaxed and then scrunched again, as if, behind those tightly locked eyelids, he was figuring a sum of arithmetic. The intricacy of the boy's ears and the translucence of his tiny nostrils already bore the stamp of Rachel's beauty. His face was so unlike the faces of the infants Bright had seen frolicking among the painted clouds of a certain church back in France. It was a good, open face, without malevolence or mischief. Bright rolled onto his back and regarded the sweeping trees above. At length he pulled himself to his feet, stripped naked, and hung his clothes up on some low-hanging branches to dry. When the father and son returned to camp, the horse took one look at Henry Bright's pale, stem-thin body and snorted. Bright ignored the animal and set about clearing a patch of ground, arranging the woolen blanket, and laying the child upon it. Next, he set the goat loose and watched her forage, by which way she led him to a mulberry bush, a serviceberry bush with a few precious berries that had somehow escaped the notice of the birds, and a gnarled old crabapple tree, loaded down with tight, bitter green fruit. He ate with as little compunction as the goat. He had fishing line, but without matches there would be no campfire. Perhaps that was just as well. Another campfire, one that might betray their whereabouts to the colonel and his sons, could be even more disastrous than the fire the angel had made him set in order to burn the cabin down. He ate the unripe crab apples and milked the goat, feeding the boy from the bucket and leaving aside a good portion from which to feed him again in the night when the child awoke hungry. As Bright made ready to sleep, the horse's derisive humor descended into contempt. It stared darkly from out of a purple and malignant silence as Bright curled his naked form closely around his son. The boy muzzled into Bright's chest. Bright noticed the angel's scornfulness, and though he said nothing, he stared back at the horse from the darkness with a like animus. He sat up again suddenly. "What did you call me?" The horse chuffed the air. "What do you mean?" "You called me something." Bright flicked the ground with his hand. "You want to call me names, you just say 'em loud enough for me to hear 'em." "You are mistaken, Henry Bright." Bright whipped his jacket over the child's nakedness, and then, with a final, deathly stare, he rolled over to face away from the animal. Around them in the forest thrummed the ordinary night sounds, but beneath these came the ossuary click as Henry Bright's jaws worked to eat the sounds deep down in his throat that might betray his great grief at the death of his wife, his foolhardy destruction of their home, and the wildfire that had ensued. He thought fearfully of being discovered in the night by the colonel and his cruel sons, and, as he bit the knuckles of his fist, the bitterness of the crab apples he had eaten mixed against his tongue with the sour shame of being mocked by his own horse.